as we today continue to, you know, think about how we make progress, we're going to think about another piece of that path we make around. To begin with, listen to this, you know, probably well-known, some parts of it, quote from Charles Spurgeon, speaking of someone who is unconsciously competent, right? Brilliant, incredible, thankful for him. But brothers, don't try to preach like Spurgeon, right? He's unique in how he does that. But here's a great quote from Spurgeon. "Preach Jesus Christ, brethren, always and everywhere. And every time you preach, be sure to have much of Jesus Christ in the sermon. You remember the story of the old minister who heard a sermon by a young man and who was asked by the preacher what he thought of it. He was rather slow to answer." Sort of like Dave Helm, I think, Godwin, right? He was slow to answer. But last he said, "If I must tell you, I did not like it at all. There was no Christ in your sermon." "No," answered the young man, "because I did not see that Christ was in the text." "Oh," said the old minister, "but do you not know that from every little town and village and tiny hamlet in England, there is a road leading to London? Whenever I get hold of a text, I say to myself, there's a road from here to Jesus Christ, and I mean to keep on his track till I get to him." "Well," said the young man, "but suppose you are preaching from a text that says nothing about Christ. Then I will go over hedge and ditch, but I will get at him." "So we must do, brethren," Spurgeon says. "We must have Christ in all our discourses. Whatever else is in or not in them, there ought to be enough of the gospel in every sermon to save a soul. Take care that it is so when you're called to preach before Her Majesty the Queen. If you have to preach to chairmen or chairwoman, still always take care that there is the real gospel in every sermon." So you've likely at least heard a portion of that quote from every little town and village and tiny hamlet in England. There is a road leading to London. And so there's a road from every text to Jesus Christ. You know, Boston is sort of like much more like Europe in a lot of ways, and this old town, old roads, and we don't have like, you know, big interstates. Instead of there's a million little narrow winding roads. That's sort of what it's like there, right? There's a number of pathways to get there going to the same place. And so friends, that's what we want to think about. If we're going to preach Scripture faithfully, we always want to preach the gospel. And we want to do that carefully. And faithfully, and in a way that is reliably grounded, tethered into the Scriptures. And so that's the question we're going to wrestle with this morning. How do we do that? I mean, if I polled you, we'd all say, yes, I want to preach Christ. But the question is, how do we do that? And in particular, how do we do it from something like 1 Samuel? But we want to, you know, consider first, do we really have a case for doing this? What is the case for preaching Christ from all the Scriptures? We want to remind ourselves of this, if we're familiar, reinforce our belief in this, or maybe be persuaded for the first time. So let's turn first to the Gospel of Luke, to Luke 24. Because we may want to be convinced ourselves, but also, as you do this in your church, there may be people in your church who come to you and say, I mean, on what basis are you making this connection? So we want to be able to make the case as well to people in our church, maybe even to elders that this may be newer to. So Luke 24, starting in verse 13, and we're going to go through verse 49. So we'd love for maybe a brother to stand up, read a paragraph, and then another one, and we'll work our way through this, just reading it aloud, and then we'll talk about it. So who'd be willing to stand up, read from 13 through 27, and somebody pick it up, 28 to 35, somebody else 36 to 42, someone else 44 to 49. Great, thanks, brother. So what a wonderful text that for many of us is quite familiar, so we're going to move briskly through this. But what we're trying to do this morning, trying to connect to the gospel, for some is controversial. And some would say, actually, from 1 Samuel, what we're going to try to do is not an appropriate faithful practice. So we want to have a grounding for this. So I want you to turn in just a second to your partner. Here's the questions we want to ask. So first, what do we see as Jesus' reading strategy? We see it in two places. When he read his Bible, what was his reading strategy? And the second, what does Jesus find about himself in the Old Testament? We'll find that in those two spots as well. And then third, related, is the Old Testament the only place that points to the death and resurrection that Jesus alludes to? So what's Jesus' reading strategy? What specifically does Jesus find about himself in the Old Testament? And is there anything beyond the Old Testament that also points to the work of Christ? So turn to your partners, take a look at that. All right, brothers. So first question, you know, how did Jesus read his Bible? What was Jesus' reading strategy? So tell me where you see it, what verse, and what do you see about Jesus' reading strategy for the Bible, and therefore what should our reading strategy be? Okay. So, yeah, verse 27, Moses and the prophets. And how does he read Moses and the prophets? Yeah, the things concerning himself. So he reads Moses and the prophets, but he reads them in light of the things concerning himself. Second spot, what's the other spot we see a reading strategy from Jesus? Okay, yeah, what do we see in 44? So here Jesus shows us, what's the reading strategy? He's reading the scriptures in light of himself, seeing his work in the scriptures. And then what specifically does he mention in these same two spots that he points to in the scriptures, in what we call the Old Testament? What are the particular aspects that Jesus zeroes in on in verse 26 and 27? Yeah, his suffering and his glory, right? His suffering and his glory, his death and his resurrection. And in verses 44 to 46, what does he zero in on? Yeah, so same thing. He points to both his suffering, death, resurrection. So Jesus clearly is making the argument here that all the scriptures we can look at in light of him, we must look at in light of him and there see his work, his death and resurrection. But then someone say, okay, well he's not talking about the New Testament yet. So then what would be our argument for seeing Christ in all of the New Testament? Is there anything in our text that would help us with that argument? So Jesus is pointing back to the Old Testament scriptures. So, you know, we'd certainly argue we can preach Christ from all the New Testament, but is there anything in our text today that Jesus would make that same argument? Yeah, that's right. So we see these witnesses he points to, which would be the apostolic witness, which would be then those who write the New Testament for us. So in both the Old and the New, we are going to preach Christ. So Jesus is arguing both the Old and New Testament, all the scriptures point to his death and his resurrection. Now, mindful of where Jeremy started us and drew this pathway, so he mentioned we start with our text. Now, first, we want to faithfully think through what we did structure. We're doing exegesis to get to the first audience. And now we're here. We're making this move over to the cross, doing what we might call theological reflection. Or the name of this talk, connecting to the gospel. Now, as we mentioned, we don't go from here to there. We've got to go first audience first and then move over there. And this is one of those things where, as I mentioned in the structure talk, I think that's where I would recommend, that's where you start in your sermon preparation. Whereas I think as we're doing sermon preparation, in my mind, this is often sort of just working in the background of my mind. Right? So throughout the week, I'm just sort of thinking on this, turning this, and sometimes I'm jotting something down. Maybe this is the connection. Maybe that's the connection. So it takes a little more sort of trying this on as opposed to like sit down for me and like, hey, I've got 25 minutes. I'm simply going to do this one piece. Often it just takes a little more sort of churning to get there as a part of that. And so as we think about connecting to the gospel, this is the drawing that at the center is the cross and resurrection of Jesus. So the Old Testament points ahead. The New Testament reflects upon it. So in our preaching, wherever we are, 1 Samuel, Revelation, Exodus, 1 Peter, we're always going to preach Christ. So here's the principle. If we're to teach the Bible as Christians, we must connect our passage to the gospel, the good news of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ and what it means. I'll say it again. If we're to teach the Bible as Christians, we must connect our passage to the gospel, the good news of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ and what it means. We could also say it this way, a little bit more elaborated. The death and resurrection of Jesus Christ is the unifying interpretive center of the Scriptures according to the Scriptures. As such, if we're to teach the Bible as Christians, we must show a legitimate connection from our text to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that word legitimate is a really important one. So we want to be careful and faithful. So we don't simply want to make a connection to Jesus, but a legitimate one. As I've been saying all along, we want to help our people see this and be able to do this. Because if we do it just sort of pulling a rabbit out of our hat that may be true, but not legitimate in this text, we actually then sort of empower our people to do the same. We don't want people in small groups across the church, like, you know, talking about this and then just grabbing Jesus, bringing him here, but it's unconnected to the passage. But if we show our people consistently how we're doing this, then they begin to have confidence, say, oh, I see how my pastor did that. I saw how Godwin did that yesterday at the end of our time when he gave that exposition. Like, oh, I see that. And then they can do it as well. So we're not only doing it for them in our preaching, but we're also want to equip them so they can do the same. And brothers, if we miss this, if we aren't doing this, then our sermons often very much just turn into moralism, teaching things that are maybe true, but they're simply moralistic. They're lacking the good news of the gospel, and ultimately they become crushing weights on our people. We have a gospel of works instead of the gospel of grace. We also might preach sort of just disconnected from history and the big story of the Scriptures. And we often, if we're not preaching the gospel, we lack access to preach the good news in an evangelistic way in a sermon. Right? So one of the great joys in preaching is, Lord willing, in each of our churches, every Sunday, there's going to be some people there who don't know Christ. And so how do we preach the gospel to them, to someone who's not a believer? But how do we preach it from our text, right? Because sometimes we could preach a faithful sermon and then sort of jump out of our text and then share the gospel as sort of a sidebar, which may be true and faithful, but it's not actually from our text. Does that make sense? So I preach 1 Samuel helpfully and clearly, but no gospel there. And then I'm like, but there are also some non-Christians here. So all of a sudden there's this sort of, you know, jerk over here. And then I'm in John 3:16, which, I mean, I'm pro John 3:16. That's great. But if it's not there, then we've just made an unnecessary jump over there. When how can I preach the gospel, the good news, in an evangelistic way from this particular text? And so then we're able to do it just in a richer, fuller way as we do that. So our diagnostic question then is this: how does my passage connect to the gospel? So I've got 1 Samuel 2:1-10. How does this passage connect to the gospel? And then, to what aspect of the gospel does it connect? We're going to talk more about that in a minute. We want to do a more fully orbed view of the gospel so then we can make faithful, legitimate connections. And I just want to encourage you, this is not easy to do in a careful and faithful way. Maybe on first hearing, you're like, oh, sure, I can get the Jesus from everywhere. Maybe so, but can we do it in a faithful and legitimate way? Now, let's just think through, what are some of the challenges, what are some of the difficulties that we might face in trying to do this? So that a pastor would face, he's convinced of this, he's like, all right, man, you've convinced me, I'm going to do that. So what are some of the challenges we may face when we try to do this? Whoa. Week in and week out. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah, so what part of the challenge is like, can we actually find it? You know, is there a connection to be made, and how do we make that? Because we've all seen, sometimes, as you said, like you mentioned a psalm, sometimes you're reading a psalm like, wow, man, it's so clear. It's a beautiful, rich connection. Those are the good texts, right, that are easy. Like, yeah, I got this on Tuesday. I already have the connection. But other times it's like, it's Saturday night, and I'm still sort of wrestling with, like, wow, what's a good, faithful connection? So that's good. Other challenges. Yeah, that's a good question, right? We could start a good fight just in this room. Like, what is the gospel? How narrow is it? We're not going to fight today. We know faith is a part of the response just based on the name of all these churches, right? So there's, Cincinnati is a faith-filled city, right? And you guys love your faith here. So no, that's a good question. Like, what do we mean by that? We'll talk about that in a minute. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one of the most common challenges is taking the same road to London every week. And it's a true faithful road, but it's the same one every week. And what's the danger for our hearers when we take the same road every week? They just kind of close their eyes, right? They just go to sleep like, oh, here it is. Yep. We always end up on, you know, the turnpike to London. And so I knew he'd get there. He got there, right? So that's one of the dangers, right, is that. The other danger, kind of the flip side of that, is finding the gospel under every rock and creating connections that aren't actually there. Or, for instance, taking every rock and turning it into the rock, right? So you're reading the Old Testament. Like, here's a rock. Jesus is a rock. Here it is, you know? Or every tree is the tree, right? And so we're making these connections. And sometimes those connections are there, but then it can impress our people. And it's like, whoa, I never thought that rock was that rock. And our people are wowed by it, but actually wasn't legitimate. So it wasn't faithful. So it can be only trekking the same road or sort of making connections that aren't really faithful. Great question. Yeah, so let's talk about that. What are some tools that we can use? So I want to turn to your partner and think through what are some tools or strategies that we could use anywhere in the scriptures, but then also then in particular, 1 Samuel, right, in narrative. But we're going to talk big picture because some of these apply more broadly than simply narrative. So turn to your partner. What are some strategies we can use to make legitimate, faithful connections? All right, turn to your partners and see what you come up with. Let's think together. What are some strategies? What are some strategies we can use to do this in a faithful, careful, legitimate way? What'd you guys come up with? Okay. Yeah. So we could make connections, right? Is there a New Testament connection? Is there a progression that's happening from old to new as a part of it? Absolutely. So is there you know, a progression, a development? Is there a clear New Testament use of that, right? So if this is used in the New Testament, that's a great tool from us. One wonderful, helpful tool, if you're going to buy a book from the room in there, the is a massive book. The New Testament use of the old is worth whatever it costs in there. And so it's like the answer key to so many of these things. And so I would commend that. I get no kickback from that. I don't even know what it costs in there, but that's a helpful tool, and you can use it both directions. So is there a New Testament use of it? Okay, what else? Okay, yeah. Give me an example, Russ. What do you mean? Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, so we could think about thinking about biblical theology and some themes that we find that run across. So there's some massive themes that are so helpful and valuable. Things like kingdom and exodus and exile and priest and temple, right? So we read some of those in Leviticus. We see this connection going forward. Godwin helped us with that last night. So are there these themes that we're going to find in the Old Testament where we are now that help make the connection, right? So we have, you know, priests happening consistently in 1 Samuel. So that would just be something I'd want to have, you know, in my mind when I see a priest. Is there a connection? Is that a connection that might help us? Okay, what else? Other tools. Yeah. Nice. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So same thing. Yeah, so we can include prophet, king, as well as some of those really important themes that just run across. Absolutely. Good. What else? Yeah. Right. That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. We're going to come back to just a second. There's another drawing I think that's really helpful because I think that's so important. And to be clear, we're pro-cross, right? So we're absolutely believing that's essential. But sometimes if that's the only aspect of it, then we don't give our people a holistic view and it limits the inroads as a part of that. So I think there's a really helpful drawing. We'll jump to in a minute from that. It's a really good point. Other tools. Yeah. It's a word we throw around a lot. Pastors love it. This is a type of this. It's a type of that. We certainly do that in 1 Samuel. What do we mean by a type? When we use that term, what are we alluding to? Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So sometimes so what's one of the types we have in 1 Samuel? Yeah. So King David. So here's this reality that is a pattern, a shadow that in some way points to the ultimate expression of it. King David is not the perfect king, but we have this lesser king and there's a greater king, the greater David, who is to come. So here's the definition. Typology is a kind of analogy, compares people, objects, institutions, and other things. And importantly, there's a kind of progression in the comparison where the final person or object is escalated in value in some way. So a type is a pattern or shadow that in some way points to the ultimate expression of it. So Moses plays an important part as the prophet, pointing ahead to the ultimate prophet, Jesus. David, a good king, anticipating the ultimate king. That would be a type. We also have, we could use an anti-type. What do we mean by that? Yeah, so it's the opposite. As opposed to good king, greater king, bad king, greater king, as a part of that. So what we'll talk about in a moment. But it's a really important tool, but also has to be used carefully, right? And we don't get too, sometimes we get excited about one tool and we see it everywhere. So an unrelated tool, sometimes guys get excited in Simeon, is some guys love chiasm. And so they do the worksheet and everywhere in the Bible, we won't name names, but there was a guy who I used to go to and he would find a chiasm everywhere. It's actually Jeremy. He loved chiasms. He'd be like, there's a chiasm, there's a chiasm. So you get excited. Same thing would be true of types. It's a good, reliable tool, but if we're not careful, we make everything to a type. Does that make sense? So we're always trying to ask, okay, is this a faithful use of that as a part of that? Sometimes we just do, you know, simple observation, depending on where we are in the Bible. Like, sometimes the gospel is just right there. Sometimes it might be prophetic fulfillment, right? We have the Old Testament prophet. So we go to Isaiah 53, and we see that. Here it is. Sometimes it's the prophecy, we see it in the New Testament mentioned. Here's the fulfillment of it. That's another way that we can get at it as well. So we mentioned this sort of expansion that I think is really valuable and important. So we do this in a holistic way that I think it was really helpful to me when I first saw this and started trying to think on this. Maybe it'll be helpful to you as well. A guy named Mike Bullmore is the one who's credited with this drawing in the Simeon circles. All right, what is this referring to? Okay, eternity past, right? So this is Christ pre-incarnate. What's this, number two? The incarnation, okay? What's three? Yeah, the life and ministry of Jesus. Four, so we put the cross here. So death. Cross and death, it's five. Actually, I can do it this way. The cross is four, death is five, resurrection is six. What's this, number seven? The ascension, yep. Eight, yeah, it's present reign. Nine, yeah, it's return, and then the consummation of all things, and then the eternal future. So this would be this expansion that helps us to think more holistically about the work of Christ, that opens up more pathways for us, and I also think so importantly to help our people think better about Christ's work in the world. So just in my own preaching, the last year I've been thinking more and more, how do I help my people think more about the present reign of Christ? Even as I preach the cross and resurrection, but how do I, is there a helpful way to get to that? Because I think sometimes we preach the cross and resurrection, but as if Christ isn't reigning today. So just my own preaching, it's been something I've kind of tried to keep towards the top. It's like, I need to do a better job of helping people think about this. So this opens the door, and all of this is the ministry of Jesus, right? So all of this is faithful work. And so then we think through, in my text, is there a place that I interact here? Now, let's do some work together. So take your Bible, turn with me to 1 Samuel 2. So 1 Samuel 2:10. Turn to your partner, it's just going to take a second, read the verse, and then ask, are there any potential typological connections in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 10? And if so, what are they? So turn to your partner, read 1 Samuel 2:10. Are there any potential typological connections? All right, so let's say you're working through 1 Samuel 2, and you've just got a scratch piece of paper. You're just jotting down potential pathways. So what would you say? We're not sure these are typological connections yet, but do you think, sort of some, lights go off my head. I should notice this. What do we see in 1 Samuel 2:10 that could be typological correspondences to Christ? What do you see? Okay, the judgment is there. Yeah. What else? The king. Excellent. What else? Okay, yeah. So his anointed, the horn of his anointed. So we're just jotting those down. Now, we're not sure yet. We're thinking those are some connections that could be there. We'd want to give some thought to that. Now, turn over to 2 Samuel. What do we see here in 2 Samuel 22, 2 and 3? Any of those same sort of flags we notice? And any continuity of some of the same potential connections? Okay, yeah, we see this horn of my salvation again. Other connections that weren't previously there that we could potentially make here. Now I begin to think, okay, is there a place in the New Testament that this idea of horn, this same picture shows up, and the anointed one, where do we see that? So we're thinking about simply the Gospel of Matthew. Where in the Gospel of Matthew do we first find this anointed one? Okay, chapter 1, where? Okay, yeah, what do we see in verse 1? Okay, so we see it alluded to at the very beginning, 1:1. Jesus, the Savior, the Christ, the Anointed One, the Son of David. So here we see it in his very name, this Anointed One, Jesus the Christ. So we begin to think, okay, I think these are good and fair and wise connections that I can make from that. Staying in 1, we get to 1:21. She will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. So we can see this connection that we can build and say, I can faithfully draw that because of what we happen with it in the New Testament. Think with me about, yes, how many of you guys did 1 Samuel 1, 1 to 20? Some of you guys, that was in your worksheet. So let's turn back there. We're not just going to ask those guys, though. How do we connect 1 Samuel 1, 1 to 20 to the gospel? And maybe let's think about this expanded view. How does this expanded view help us to make a legitimate, faithful connection from 1 Samuel 1, 1 to 20? Yeah. Because one of the challenges, our people can sort of believe in a Jesus that's kind of untethered from history. Right, that Jesus kind of just comes into the world. It's good news that he does, but are people not having any idea of the sort of the big storyline? But when the storyline picks up in 1 Samuel, I mean, God has promised he's going to send this deliverer all the way back in Genesis, right? And he's been pointing to it. But honestly, at this point, things look like a disaster. I mean, God's people are a mess. The priesthood is a mess. Is God going to come through for his people? And so here we see God faithfully continuing this big story, even though, you know, Christ is not here yet, but back here, God is at work continuing this. And he will send through this barren woman, he will then send this priest who will then play the role in anointing the king. And so you don't have to turn this into a huge part of your sermon, but it's an opportunity to help our people understand the big story. How does the God's big redemptive story connect? And the more often we can do that, the better we help our people understand the scriptures, and the more we persuade them the Old Testament is actually valuable and fruitful for us. Because most American Christians are New Testament Christians, aren't they? I mean, like, it's like we don't even need the Old Testament. Like, I don't give me that. Just give me the New Testament. And so how do we, just faithfully preaching, help our people to open their eyes and be like, oh man, I want all the Bible. I want to see the big story as a part of that. And so this will help us more consistently get there and persuade our people to the value of that. Does that make sense? It's a really important piece of that. Now let's do one other spot. 1 Samuel 10. We have two kings, as we see over and over in 1 Samuel, don't we? One of them is clearly a type of Jesus, right? Which one? Obviously David, right? But then Saul. How do we think about him? And so let's just peruse a couple of spots about Saul. 1 Samuel chapter 9, verse 1 and 2. We see just a little bit of brief background mentioning Saul. Handsome man. No one more handsome than he. Taller, bigger than everyone else. Subtle description. Then we come to 1 Samuel 10, 20 and 20 to 22. What happens there? Yeah, he's a reluctant king, not willing to take on this role of king. Yeah. 1 Samuel 16, 7. Turn over there. What do we see about Saul here? So the Lord looks at the heart, not outwardly, right? So this isn't specifically about Saul, but it's beginning to paint this picture of just outward appearance is not ultimate. Saul's this physically imposing, but lacking at the heart, whereas David is the one who has the heart God is interested in. And so we could work through 1 Samuel and see again and again Saul, and we use him then as the antitype. He's the contrast, right? So we see David is great here, Jesus is greater. We can also see Saul is a disaster, Jesus is greater. Does that make sense? So you can use those same ways depending on what is in our particular passage. So both type and the contrasting type or the anti-type we can also use. And brothers, just let me encourage you, this is good and important work that we want to do, but it takes work. We want to be careful and cautious, but we can make progress in this. And I just want to encourage you, one, to we also be alert to, is this a legitimate connection? And sometimes that's where, you know, commentaries can be helpful, just kind of check this. Or just a faithful brother who's doing some of this work together. Because if I'm discovering something new, I probably want to check that, right? If, like, no one else is saying this, I may be on pretty shaky ground. So it may be helpful to, you know, call a brother and say, hey, man, I'm preaching this text, and does this feel like this is a legitimate connection? Because he might say, oh, yeah, I think I've heard, you know, I've heard so-and-so say this before. Yeah, that's good. Or they might say, I've never heard that, and I think I wouldn't recommend that. So helpful sort of input can help us with that. But then also be careful. I have to tell myself over and over of just going the same path week after week after week. And so let's say I'm preaching 1 Samuel. And I come to a text and I say, actually in theological reflection, I find two, I think, really solid pathways to the gospel. I could use both of them faithfully. At that point, then I might ask, okay, do I know where I went last week to get at the gospel? Where I might go next week to the gospel? So if this one, if I have a path that I haven't been using and I can faithfully get there, I think I'd want to use that one in that passage. Does that make sense? Just so we're not doing the same thing over and over. So Mike Chaney graciously took us to dinner last night. And so I have no idea where I am, but he picked us up. We drove this place. But we drove there and came back two different ways. He wants to show us different parts of Cincinnati. It was fun. It was awesome. That's a good way of preaching, right? If it's a faithful road to get there, just so that our people don't kind of turn their minds off. Okay, yeah, Pastor Curtis, yep. He's going to connect to Jesus here. But he always goes that same road. Just like, you know, when my wife is riding with me and she says, okay, we're on this road, she goes right to sleep. It's the same path. You know, she does it in my sermons too, but you know, when I'm driving. And so we don't want our people to be like, oh yeah, I know this. I'm pro-gospel, but he always goes there. So I'll tune out and then come back in a minute. But if we can faithfully say, nope, you can go this way. You can go that way. Here's another way to get there as well. Then we help our people to be excited to say, wow, didn't Godwin yesterday open up the scriptures to us in such a helpful way and connected to Christ, and we felt our hearts warm, stirred by that, seeing the beauty of it. So brother, it's careful work and it's hard work. So we're going to fight laziness, which can lead us to just repetitiveness. Also maybe connected to laziness would just be, you know, procrastination. Right, I'm running late. I don't have time to really reflect well on the passage. Does that make sense? So the sooner in the week I'm thinking about this, the more likely I can get to it in a more legitimate route. So let me restate the principle. Take a couple of questions. If we're to teach the Bible as Christians, we must show the gospel, the good news of the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, and what it means in every passage. One other thing I would say is this, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, in choosing the units of the scripture, this is also important. Actually, we wouldn't say that every single verse of 1 Samuel has a gospel connection. We wouldn't say that. But we would say every story unit does. So if I'm going to think I'm going to preach through, okay, what's a unit in which I can make a good connection? But if I'm preaching, you know, verse by verse, only one verse at a time through 1 Samuel, then God help your people, you know, if that's what you try to do. But I don't think you're going to be able to make that connection every single solitary verse. Does that make sense? So thinking about what are the units you're going to use.